Amy, on this podcast, we try to always offer useful takeaways. And if you learn nothing else from us, learn this useful parenting lesson by Pampers Cruisers 360.
Pampers Cruisers 360 are the ultimate parent hack, the best diaper to use as soon as your baby starts standing or walking. Instead of ordinary diaper tabs, they have a unique 360-degree stretchy waistband that moves with your wild child.
Pampers Cruisers 360 makes it so easy to change your baby. Who probably doesn't stop moving just because they need a diaper changed? Just slide on to apply and away they go.
And fear not, parents. Pampers Cruisers 360 offers an up to 100% leak-free fit. And they just got even better with a new blowout barrier. Need we say more?
For trusted protection, trust Pampers, the number one pediatrician recommended brand. Download the Pampers Club app today and earn Pampers cash. Then redeem your Pampers cash for exclusive Pampers coupons, savings, and rewards.
Only redeemable via Pampers Club. Pampers cash has no cash value.
I'm not interested in spending my one wild life like, oh, it's totally fine. You forgot my birthday and I'll just go back to work in the kitchen.
What fresh hell?
Laughing in the face of motherhood.
The best way to maintain a system in which women work for little to nothing is to convince society that they are not working at all.
With Margaret Abels
and Amy Wilson.
If you are not happy in your marriage, you are not having a romantic marriage.
A podcast that solves today's parenting dilemmas
so you don't have to.
For 5 straight hours, I completed 3 loads of laundry, deep cleaned 2 bathrooms, did a complete changeover of 3 kids, seasonal clothing, ran the dishwasher, and vacuumed out the car. I think I've injured something in my back. But don't worry, I'll walk it off.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to What Fresh Hell, Laughing in the Face of Motherhood. This is Margaret.
And this is Amy, and today we're going to talk about making what we do more visible. Or should we make what we do more visible, I guess, is the first question.
We should.
Yes, we should. Okay, and then we'll move on to
so we're wrapped. To how. Let's move on. Next episode. What's our next topic?
That was really short, but I do have a mailbag. Can we start with a mailbag?
Oh, let's at least do a mailbag before we close.
Oh, yes. Wait a minute. Time for mailbag. Wait. Check the mailbag.
It's been a while since we did a mailbag, and we have really a good one this week. This isn't so much a mailbag as a shout out, but we don't have the sound cue for that. And I didn't want to start a whole new, you know, line of content that we have to worry about.
Yeah, there's only so many audio stings we can handle with our production.
But I wanted to give a shout out to Elizabeth, who is one of the top people in our What Fresh Hell podcast group. She's always there with the help. She's always there with the funny comments. And she is now the mother of 3 under 5. And she just had a baby girl. And the little girl, at least as of this taping, does not have a name yet because Elizabeth was told it was going to be a boy. So she... So surprise, it's a girl. And she's absolutely adorable. And Elizabeth also said something I totally forgot, which is that with breastfeeding, that the cramps while you're breastfeeding get worse with each successive child. I had memory hold that.
Horrible.
And it's totally true.
It's amazing what you forget, friends. Let me tell you, it's amazing what fades away because I haven't thought of that. I would have said it's horrible, but I forgot all about it.
Yeah. Yeah. And I have a friend, Posey, who commented, she's a mother of 5. And she was for sure. And I had forgotten all about it. And yes, it's a thing. So Elizabeth, wishing you and your new little girl all the best.
Yeah, I just ran into someone who's expecting their 5th. And from the dilation of their pupils, I think it was a surprise. They were like, I was sort of going with congratulations and I got wide-eyed, horrifying stare. Yeah, surprising. You know, they did not seem too happy about it. But we're not just here today, Amy, to talk about the horror of having children, and especially having more than one or two. We are here to talk about invisible work, a topic we have addressed before.
Yes.
And invisible work, in case you're not familiar with the term, you're soaking in it. It is the work that goes into making life happen in a family that is not super visible to others. Like the house is magically clean. The dishes disappear and get back in the closet. The laundry somehow magically appears in people's drawers. The camp forms are filled out and everyone goes to camp in the summer magically.
It's invisible to other people, but it's also invisible often to yourself. Like, I can find myself kicking myself, like, I didn't do anything today. And if you really went back, like, yes, you did. You did the taxes. You did this. You called the pediatrician. You did all those things that somebody needs to do, the camp forms. And then all of a sudden, it's 5:30 and that's what you did today.
Right.
It can be invisible even to you, which can lead to frustration.
I am currently reading a book by a friend of ours, Liz Lenz, and the book is called The American Ex-Wife. And it's, I think, doing very well, maybe on the bestseller list. But
yeah, it's a bestseller. Yeah.
A lot of people reading it. And it is it's funny because I was reading it on the way to a wedding shower and then I was sitting with the guests at the wedding shower reading it. Like, oh, what's your book about? And I was like, well, the thesis of it is that marriage is a poisonous prison. And she is coming at it very much from the point of view that marriage hurts all women. It's a kind of a radical, much in the way that when we talked about mom blame, we kind of were like, I thought I was going to come at it from the point of view of, oh, well, we just need to like stop taking so much on and da da da. And then I was like, no, we have to burn down the patriarchy. I think this book is an indictment of invisible work in a really profound and radical way. I think the reason the book is doing so well is because it is extremely, it's a very radical idea that people don't feel comfortable with. And she says in the book a lot how people are always like, no, my marriage is fine. Everything's fine with me, because people don't like to see marriage attacked for many different reasons. But there is a lot in the book, and there's a line that has been pulled out of the book a lot, where she says, I didn't want to spend my one magical, wild life telling a grown man how to find the ketchup in the refrigerator. And it's
funny, but it's not funny.
It's funny, but it's not funny. And I think that looking at invisible work, both from the point of view, which is kind of our default of like, it kind of stinks, but it's funny, ha ha. And maybe looking at it from the point of view of, it's really kind of cancerous to our existence and possibly to the happiness of our partnerships, is also worthwhile.
I just pulled up a quote that I just saw yesterday on Instagram from another book called Emotional Labor by Rose Hackman, a book that I really enjoyed. Now, Liz Lenz is more like essays. It's more personal essays that are getting at a larger point, right? Like, I love that kind of book. And Rose Hackman's is more reported, what they call reported nonfiction, like studies and whatever. This is a quote from Rose Hackman's Emotional Labor, which is what she calls invisible labor. She calls it emotional labor. And the book is all about that. She says, the best way to maintain a system in which women work for little to nothing is to convince society that they are not working at all.
Oh, man, I got the chills with that one. This is a lot of what Liz talks about in the book. Oh, man. Wait, read that one more time, Amy. We got to make that land. That is deep.
The best way to maintain a system in which women work for little to nothing is to convince society that they are not working at all. By which, it is the thing, like I wrote about this in terms of like college admissions. The college admissions today for your kid is overwhelming, and there's spreadsheets and it's a thing and a thing, and it's really complicated. But that it's become so complicated and so hard and so stressful is put strictly on like the annoying parents who are being really annoying and bridezilla and overthinking it, instead of like the system, like this, it's getting a little crazy and it's going to crack and it's untenable. But the mom who's complaining that this seems really stressful and unfair is just being annoying. It can't be as bad as she says it is. And there's so much invisible work involved with that particular part of your kid's life.
I think that there can be a lot of truth in all of this. And I think that you don't have to leave this episode being like, I'm getting divorced and starting a new life as a radical feminist on a compound, for it to have meaning. And in Liz's book, she talks a lot about like wedding showers and just the expectation of like, oh yeah, he'll do all this annoying stuff and then you'll die, kind of is like the hilarious stories told about marriage. And that I think our thesis today is, what changes when you make this work visible and you force this work to be shared? And I have a specific type of spouse and we have a specific type of marriage, but I do think that in the first several years of our marriage, I was pretty unhappy. And I think that we came close to, I don't know that we would have divorced, but like having some sort of like profound marital death, because I was 37 when I got married. I'd been independent. I'd been working. I'd been running my own home and space and making my own money. And I got to a point, and I think luckily for me, my spouse was really able to hear me of, this is not what happiness looks like for me. Being last on everybody's list, I'm not doing it. Like, I really cannot and will not live like this. And I think we were able to work out a bunch of systems where I also bring some money into the marriage and do things that, you know, maybe equal the scales in that way. But I really think we had a very profound marital reset at some point where I was able to say, I'm not going to live like this. I'm not going to, from basic things to like, it is so not okay to screw up my birthday, like not get me a gift. And oh my God, I got us this little taken food on the way home from work because I didn't start thinking about it till 5 o'clock. Like, that's actually not okay. And I used a lot of phrases like, you only have so many opportunities to show me that I'm valued in this family and you're blowing them. And like, I'm not going to stay in a situation I'm not valued in. And I think my husband always did really value me, but he was quite bad at expressing it in the early years of our marriage. And we really had to have like a come to Jesus moment of, we have to pretty radically change the way we're doing things in the house because I'm not interested in spending my one wild life like, oh, it's totally fine. You forgot my birthday and I'll just go back to work in the kitchen.
Yes, to all of that. I think that it's called the invisible workload for a reason, and it isn't because he's like, he, in a very general sense, you know, the non-default parent is covering their eyes and going like, la, 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 I'm choosing not to see how hard you work for me all the time. I think they really don't see it. And I think that sometimes we, the default parents who do all of this work, I don't think we see the extent of what it is. I think you have to make it visible first for yourself before you can start to be like, and here's how much there is.
Yes. And I have some systems that we've worked with that I want to talk about after this break.
Margaret, exciting news. I am about to have a new baby nephew. And believe it or not, this will be my 13th nephew.
Amy, you're ready to give up your amateur status. You're a pro aunt at this point.
Our family has seen a lot of babies. And as soon as they start standing or walking, I send them all a whole lot of Pampers Cruisers 360.
Pampers Cruisers 360 don't have ordinary diaper tabs. Instead, they have a unique 360-degree stretchy waistband that moves with your newly mobile little one.
Pampers Cruisers 360 offer a gap-free fit that is up to 100% leak-proof, crucial once your baby is quite literally up and at 'em. And that gap-free fit helps prevent your baby from taking off their diaper, a habit you do not want them to get into.
You can say that again. And Pampers Cruisers 360 just got even better with a new blowout barrier. Need we even elaborate on the need for that, friends? For trusted protection, trust Pampers, the number one pediatrician recommended brand.
Download the Pampers Club app today and earn Pampers cash. Then redeem your Pampers cash for exclusive Pampers coupon savings and rewards.
Only redeemable via Pampers Club. Pampers cash has no cash value.
More and more, you hear about the importance of electrolytes as part of staying hydrated because you need the sodium and the potassium, not just the water. And whether you're looking to hydrate during a workout, while traveling, or at the end of a long night, Sports Research Hydrate Electrolytes have got you covered with over 65 trace minerals, 7 essential vitamins, and coconut water powder.
Crisp and refreshing and without any sugar, this is hydration powered by Sports Research. They're little packets you can just grab and take with you to mix into your water bottle on the go. My favorite flavor so far, Amy, gotta be the cherry pomegranate.
Interesting. My high schooler likes the lemon lime, and she keeps a few handy in her backpack for days that she has practiced after school. These electrolytes have the sodium and the potassium that you need to go with it in the optimal ratio for daily hydration.
Visit sportsresearch.com and use code WHATFRESH at checkout for 50% off your purchase of Hydrate.
That's Sports Research, SportsResearch, sportsresearch.com, and use code WHATFRESH for 50% off your Hydrate electrolytes order.
So I've talked before on the podcast and we have just fallen away from it. And it's funny, we just put it back on the calendar. And because things have gotten a little off, we're like, I want to do this at my husband's office. After hours, we're going to sit down and have a 3-hour meeting where we go through, you know, it's like we haven't done taxes correct. You know, we just haven't put together all these different things. We haven't, this one isn't signed up for the right things over the summer. We haven't bought tickets for these things. And basically, our default was trying to have a Sunday meeting. Sunday afternoons, we would take an hour and say, what's coming up? What needs to be done? We have a Google to-do list. And it's like, you do this and I'll do this.
Has it fallen away?
It had fallen away a little bit. And now we're going to do like a State of the Union kind of big 3-hour meeting. Of course, my husband turned out he's traveling for work. He's going to be away from it. We have to push it back. But it's got to stay on the calendar, because what I find is when I feel like I'm taking on too much, I get very resentful towards my husband and my kids, and it hurts our relationships, you know?
And yet you're not wrong to be resentful.
Oh, no, I'm not. I did not mean to imply that I was wrong to be resentful.
Right. The fix isn't stop being so resentful.
Absolutely not. The fix, and I do think this is something that, you know, we talk about family of origin and other stuff, that there are some traditions in our family history of like, the long-suffering mom is such a saint. And I remember having a conversation of like, hi, here's a role I'm not interested in being cast in. The long-suffering mom is such a saint. I refuse that role. I will not do it. And I think that giving voice to, you actually have to help me keep this, it's not ever going to be even. The first 5 years when I had 3 kids and someone was always breastfeeding and my husband was working 65 hours a week, I did 90% of the work and he does 10. Now, I think we're pretty close to 50-50. Sometimes we're 60-40 on my husband's side because he does a lot of stuff with scouts and other things that I'm not involved in. He goes camping with them on the weekends. Great. It's not even. It's just a show of respect. You cannot respect somebody who you're treating badly, and you cannot respect someone who's treating you badly. And even if they don't intend to treat you badly.
It's what we were talking about last time about when one family member's emotions run the show. The part that's jumping out at me is that fairness, that the other kids are like, it's not fair that my sibling is being treated differently, and that you have to sort of have a conversation around fairness doesn't mean equality. Fairness doesn't mean the same. You know, if you have a spouse who works a bajillion hours a week and extra shifts and late nights, they can't do 50% of the household labor if they're not home to do it. So it doesn't have to be equal, but it does have to be fair. It does have to be something that works for everybody. What's fair isn't necessarily 50-50, but it does require exploration.
For sure. And to be fair to my husband, he makes more money than I do. And so, you know, we're trying to build something and building a company, and like the income isn't really there because we're in a building phase. And like my husband makes the money that pays for our house. And so he could certainly be like, well, I make the money, you run the house, and that's how we're going to do it. He's able to hear me that that doesn't work for me. I am working very hard at things that are not currently making as much money as I would like them to make, but we are striving for equity. And I think in Liz's book, it's interesting. They come out of an evangelical Christian tradition. And I think the gender roles were very strong in her marriage. And I think she had a spouse who was definitely not interested in these conversations. And I will say, as we often say, you may not be in a relationship where these conversations are possible. And so that my husband and I were both older. He's just a kind of an open-minded guy. He loves me a lot. He wants it to work. He really has my happiness as a very important thing on his list. And so he's willing to sit with me on Sundays and take half the things off of my list. That's not every spouse.
No, but there's two things here. One is like, what's the fair distribution of these household duties on an ongoing basis, right? Like, what's fair and equitable? And there's also the times when the taxes are due, when you have a sick kid who needs 4 different doctor's appointments, like those moments when you're moving. I'm like, when the stuff hits the fan, there's all of a sudden a lot more to do than usual. It's 10 days till Christmas, whatever it is. It can be a good reason, a bad reason. At those moments, you can have a distribution that works a lot of the time or most of the time, but it doesn't change the fact that in that moment, there is more to do than you have time to do it. And it's not because you're lazy and it's not because you're disorganized. It's because there's more to do than you have time to do it. Like this example right now, like taxes, summer camp, two huge things right now have to happen in the next week. And that's when you need to be able to meet and just say, like, I'm drowning and you need to take some of this over and really take some of this over, which is way more complicated than it sounds.
For sure. And also, I would add, and this is why I like a weekly meeting, you need to set up systems for this, because I also understand that people are going, it's too much work for me to explain to my husband how to throw a birthday party. Like that, I'd rather just do it myself. And I don't mean like, oh, you're gatekeeping and you're staying. I mean, these have to be set up as full systems. And I will say, with strengths and weaknesses, I lose our car keys 6 times a week. I mean, I'm ridiculous, but my husband definitely needs to be reminded if I tell him camp forms that I know I'm going to have to tell him that 3 or 4 times. And I'll say, set an alarm on your phone. We try to find systems that help this stuff, but we can support each other if we know that the other person is really trying, you know? And I do think that part of it is you have to take this over, as you said, and really do it. Registering the kids for camp is 7 steps.
It's 7 steps. So that's what I was going to say. So we had Eve Rodsky on a couple of years ago. She wrote this book, Fair Play, and she has a process. She has a deck of cards you can buy. And the work is making it visible. The person who doesn't usually sign the kids up for camp doesn't know that signing kids up for camp, I mean, let's really break it down, right? Signing kids up for camp is researching, finding 10 options because 8 of them are going to be sold out already.
Possibly convincing your kid to go to camp, which is a multi-week process.
Right. Lining up doing all the research, then lining up the ones that have availability left and the ones you can afford with ones that your kid wants to do with the calendar for the 3 kids. That's like at least 4 more steps, right? Then it's reaching out to get the application. Then it's filling out the application. Then it's submitting the application. Then it's confirming the receipt of the application. Then it's making the payment. Then it's adding the dates to the calendar. Then it's making a list of everything they're going to need for soccer camp.
Don't forget medical forms. We're doing this right now. Got to do the medical.
Then there's the medical forms. Then there's the emailing again to say, yes, I did send the form, and okay, they want you to resubmit it. Then there's getting the medical form. Then it's sending it back to the camp, medication clearance, making sure they have the size 5 soccer ball, not a size 4, and the cleats and 2 water bottles and the, you know, personal first aid kit, everything the camp says they need for the first day. Then it's signing them up for the bus. Then it's then. All of that is signing the kids up for camp. And honestly, that's what I mean before. Like, the other person isn't a bad person if they've never done it. They don't understand that signing the kids up for camp is a 36-step, 20-hour exercise over the next 3 weeks. They're like, fine, I'll sign the kids up. I'll do it right now. And, right? And then you end up fighting because they do it wrong or they drop the ball or whatever. They drop the ball at the 40-yard line. I don't know, I'm not a very good... 40-yard line is really far, right?
No, not the 40.
The 5-yard line? They don't want to get it very far before they're like, I did it. No, you did 15% of the work that has to be done.
Right.
But they're not necessarily a bad person. They're just ill-informed that they don't know that there's 35 more steps.
I mean, if it's a case of what they call weaponized incompetence, which is, I don't know what you want me to do with this pan, so I'll just let it soak. Oh, I know. Like, the kitchen is your realm, and God forbid I go in there, you know? Like, you don't like the way I do things.
I wouldn't do it the way you want it. Right, right.
Or, yeah, they don't want to do it.
Or they do it badly on purpose. That's weaponized incompetence. Like, I'll leave wet towels all over the bathroom floor so you just bathe the kid next time. I'll do it not very well.
Or they're maybe playing into something that they understand to be correct, which is like, well, I'm just a dude. I don't know how to do it. You know, whatever the thing. You can point that out. And we're having this problem right now because I do a lot of the cooking. And I'm teaching now at night. So my husband has to cook a couple days a week. His brother is a very good chef. And so he's been like, you know, asking him for stuff. And he's got some recipes he could do. But my husband has this crazy default. He's an engineer. Maybe this is where it comes from. That he gets nutty. Everything, he's going to make it better. That's his thing, you know? And so he'll take 2 steaks and it's like, all they need is a little salt and pepper, throw them on the grill. And he's putting on the onion powder and spice. He's rubbing stuff. I'm like, what are you doing, crazy?
Like, right. Like, dinner's late and he's still like looking up the best rub for a steak.
But he's not even looking it up. He's kind of making it up. And I'm like, okay. You just put 46 pounds of garlic. And he did it the other night. And there was so much spice on these 2 steaks that, you know, we're not filet mignons, but it was probably $20 worth of steak. And he put them on the grill and they both lit on fire. And I was like, you're driving me crazy. Like, why do you have to be like Cecil B. Demented in the kitchen with your like directorial food stuff? And so it is hard when you're in other people's zone of influence, basically. Mm-hmm. But you can have conversations about it. Like my sister has a phrase with her husband. You can either do it the way you want it, or you can have me do it and you're not allowed to comment at all. And I think that's right. You know, like if he's going to cook dinner, I can't tell him how to cook. He could do his whole crazy, like, spice man. What is the guy? Salt Bae. Like, he gets, you know, he's going to spice it all up.
I was going to say Emeril Lagasse, but that's an old Deluxe alert.
Back in my day. Yeah, the guy, I'm thinking of the Instagram guy with the glasses. They call him Salt Bae.
Yeah. Yes. I think that goes back again to, like, if you want your spouse to handle summer camp signups this year, and they're not wrong when they're like, either you do it or you let me do it. I think you really do have to do this 36-step thing. Like, I think Eve Rodsky's right. You have to literally make it visible.
Or you do your Sunday meeting, and then every Sunday, where are we on summer camps?
But you're still a step. There's still a process that you're going through, because then you agree to the process. And the person taking on something understands the largeness of what they're being asked to take on. And then the process is there. And it's even repeatable next year. Now you have a system and you go back next April when it's time to start thinking about summer camps. It's there. You don't have to be like, so where are we? You're moving through a process, and then the process is in charge, not the spouse who's like, you told me you're going to do this. Why haven't you done it?
Right. I will say, my husband and I have started, because at some point we had a fight where I expressed quite loudly, probably, if you acted this way at work, you would be fired. Like, you can't be this bad at doing stuff in the house. And if you at work, somebody, not that I'm the boss, but like if your boss was like, get this done, and you were like, oh, I forgot, I'm sorry, you would be fired. And so we have kind of, as a result of some heated conversations, we approach it more like we approach work, you know? What needs to be done? Here are the lists. Who's doing what? And then we have like a staff meeting once a week where we check in. How we do it on summer camps. Oh, I'm held up on medical forms. I could probably take this week. I'm not that busy. We go back and forth on who's doing what. And we check in frequently so that it doesn't become just me kind of nagging, like, is it done yet? Is it done yet? Is it done yet?
I have another sort of workplace comparison that's useful. Can we take a break and I'll tell you what it is?
Yes, we can.
Feel like you're the martyr in your family? You're not alone. Hey, this is Joanne.
And Brie.
And we're from the No Guilt Mom podcast. Brie, we talk to a lot of moms.
Yeah, we sure do.
And if you're a mom who has a to-do list that is so massive that you get overwhelmed and you shut down,
or if you fall into the habit of doing everything for everyone and don't know how to change it, we can help you become a no-guilt mom.
We're going to take you from family martyr to family model. That's role model, so that you role model the behavior that you want to see out of your kids.
You're going to go from being tired and overwhelmed to energized and guilt-free.
Every week, you'll get actionable strategies that you can implement right away from the experts that we interview and from us.
We also have a whole lot of fun, so check out the No Guilt Mom podcast everywhere you listen to your favorite shows.
If you're a parent, I invite you to join us at the Mindful Mama podcast, where it's all about becoming a less irritable, more joyful parent. With sometimes hilarious and always thought-provoking experts and friends, at Mindful Mama, we know that you cannot give what you do not have. And when you have calm and peace within, then you can give it to your children. I'm Hunter Clark Fields, and I can't wait to see you there. Listen in to the Mindful Mama podcast.
And now, what we say we do versus what we really do.
From the What Fresh Hell podcast.
We're having a little birthday party for my daughter on Sunday.
I've assembled a budget-friendly yet hugely wondrous Harry Potter-themed party complete with magical gifts, food, and decor for 24 children that will feature simulated broom rides, pin the snitch on the Quidditch pitch games, and a butterbeer drinking contest. It should be a magical 2 hours that I've been working on for 2 months.
Oh, I just tidied up the house this afternoon.
For 5 straight hours, I completed 3 loads of laundry, deep-cleaned 2 bathrooms, did a complete changeover of 3 kids, seasonal clothing, ran the dishwasher, and vacuumed out the car. I think I've injured something in my back. But don't worry, I'll walk it off.
My daughter is enjoying soccer.
6 months ago, I started observing my kid at play and I thought she'd be a great fit on the soccer team, so I researched a couple of options in the area and found a great AYSO team for her to join. I got her uniform measurements, signed her up, and got her medical forms completed. Also, I shopped for cleats. And now, I get to spend my Saturdays sitting on a wet chair watching her run in the wrong direction and occasionally stopping to pick flowers. You know, it's really fun.
We had a nice dinner last night.
After several years of creating a culture of harmony at our dining table, we sat down to a meal that took me 2 hours to prepare, after months of internet searches, to discover a recipe that lays at the exact Venn diagrammable nexus of the 8 items that everyone in my family will eat. I made sure that my kid who doesn't like mouth sounds or strange smells sat 2 seats away from my kid who likes mustard on everything. And the conversation cards I purchased last week kept everyone talking and laughing. 2 of my kids said the meal was fine and 1 said it was yucky. I'm going to bed now and crying a little. Night-night!
This has been What We Say We Do Versus What We Really Do.
From the What Fresh Hell podcast. So I have a workplace thing and I have a professional thinker thought on all of this that I want to give you. The first one is something we've talked about a lot in our own business and our relationship together and the people that we work with, which is outcomes and not tasks. Like, sign the kids up for camp. Well, I wrote the theater person and they never wrote back.
Right?
That's not signing the kids up for camp. That's a task. And like people often at work, particularly junior people, will do, well, I tried to get you a taxi, but they said the person wasn't there and I had to call back. And then they just stopped right there.
Then like, see.
Right. No. It wasn't a task. It was an outcome. The outcome, signing kids up for camp is I get to the airport, is the kid gets on the camp bus the first morning, right? Like that's the outcome. And making sure that everybody understands that you're what you're talking about when you're dividing up your workload differently or changing things is outcomes, is making sure that the kids always have their shots, right? Not like call the doctor once.
Yes. And I think that's right, that on our shared to-do list, we orient that way, but it's a good point that like your side of the holiday card list or your side of the holiday gift list is clear. That's when it's done. And it also allows a conversation that we talked about with Nick North a long time ago, which is a rating system of, I want to go on a hike this weekend with a family, and it's a 2 for me on level of importance. I want you to take the week off when we're visiting your family so that you don't have work at all that week is a 9 for me. And developing some sort of language around, because I sometimes will get stuck because I have a vision, a strong vision for how everything should be. And I know we get around the like, well, maternal gatekeeping, and that's an annoying term. But sometimes I do, and I recognize in myself that I'm like, it is very important that you write a handwritten card to your grandmother for her birthday because she will really appreciate it. It's not really my business. It's not something maybe my spouse has done before. I've kind of invented it and I need to let that go because it's not important to him and that's why he's not doing it. And whether or not it's important to me and whether or not I think it would be lovely for his grandma, I have to take that off the list.
But then maybe that's like, then you're not writing a handwritten note to your spouse's grandmother.
Oh, no. I'm not writing a handwritten note. It's
right. You're not taking on that labor that should be done by somebody because they don't feel like
but
it.
But on the to-do list, another rule that we have in our partnership, and we've talked about it before, is no takes it. That the person who says no, that you have to kind of convince the other person. And I have seen this play out a little bit on the to-do list of like, it is not important to me I don't have time this month to build the shed that we were talking about that's going to house the cushions so they don't get dirty. They're going to have to stay in the corner of the downstairs office because I'm too busy at work to build that shed. And although that's a great idea, it's not a live and die importance thing. And that might be for some people like, I don't really care if the kids go to camp, you know, like, but you got to have a discussion about it. And then it's got to become a thing of, do you understand the consequences of the kids not going to camp? Like, I can't work if the kids aren't here. But all visibility, I think, matters. We recently had a project that my spouse and I did, and he did a lot of the work on it. And it was kind of his project, and it was a photo project. And at a certain point, I was looking at it and I said, do you realize that I took every single photo? I took every single photo in this 45 photo collage.
That surprises nobody listening.
I am the like family photographer and I do that and stuff. But even that kind of visibility, it's like, Well, I did it. It was my project. It's like, right. But all the underlying work of this project of me saying, like, you two get together. Hey, let's all stand together while we're at dinner and get a picture. And, oh, this is a great view. Like, I see it in it. The year of photographs that went into it, that was all actually my work. And, you know, I think it's worth giving voice to that. And another thing we talk about, which I have been doing much more, is giving voice to it to my kids. Like sitting down to dinner and they're like, this is delicious. And I will say, you know, that really means a lot to me. I'm not a huge fan of cooking, but I have tried to find a couple of really good recipes. And like, this food was not delivered to the table by the like thankless saint cook mom. It was delivered by me, who has a busy job and a busy life. And I took time out to make stuff that I thought you guys would enjoy and would be healthy for you. So thank you for acknowledging that, because it is worth acknowledging.
And again, I think that's like, that is so important for your kids to hear. And it's also so important for you to say out loud. Like, there were many steps involved in this, and go through what they are. So what I was going to say before is there's a researcher named Allison Daminger, and she talks about what she calls cognitive labor. So if Rose Hackman calls it emotional labor, Allison calls it cognitive labor. And both of those are terms I kind of prefer to invisible workload, because invisible somehow feels like maybe imaginary or optional. This is cognitive labor. Everything we've been talking about, she would call cognitive labor. And she's says it's four steps. Everything you do making dinner involves four steps. So the first step is anticipating the need. Shoot, it's 4:30. I got to figure out what's for dinner, right? Identifying options for meeting the need. Do I have what I need here? Do I have to run to the grocery store, right? Oh, but she doesn't like chicken, you know, whatever. That's the second step. So anticipating the need, then identifying options to meet the need, then making the decision and executing it, making dinner, and then monitoring the progress. So this is more like less for dinner than for like, did those camp forms come back? Did they get in somewhere? Using that math, every single thing you do is four things. It's not one. And it just becomes very quickly easy to see that no wonder you can't get everything done you thought you were going to do. It's you don't have 12 things in your to-do list today. You have 48.
Absolutely.
And I think it's important for you to get that before you start to explain it to the people around you who don't get it.
Yeah. And I think that explaining it can get mired down, because it immediately becomes an accusation. You don't do enough. You don't take care of me.
You're complaining.
You don't care about my needs. And I definitely had a lot of those conversations early on in my marriage. And I think they were most effective when I was able to say, I don't want my existence to be being the cook and the maid and the valet driver of a household. Like, I am a 37-year-old woman with my own hopes and dreams and needs that I want to pursue. And when it all defaults to me, I feel that you see me as cook, maid, valet first. And also, that's how you lose. I mean, I think that some people feel like, well, it's not romantic or it's not fun to have a business relationship with your partner. But I would strongly advocate for the fact that if you are not happy in your marriage, you are not having a romantic marriage.
Sure. And when you list it, like when you have a meeting, when you make a list, when you say like, actually, let's really talk about everything as you go into the summer camp. And then can you really do all of this? Or should I do some of it? When you make it visible, then it's non-negotiable. And then there's nothing to fight about. I guess you could fight about, are we sending the kids to camp this summer? You know, but then like you said, you have to get into like, well, then am I taking time off from work? They have to go. It's stressful. It's expensive. There are 37 things that need to happen. What are they? Right. And then it's not like, why haven't you? You know, then you can't, you don't have to take on that role of reminder.
And I think something else that we do in our partnership, and we have given voice to in our partnership, especially following any kind of conflicts that we've had, is we have to come into every discussion assuming the other person has the best intentions. Like, we've formed a partnership because we respect the other person's intellect and abilities, and we may have different abilities in different areas, and you may be better at stuff than I am. And sometimes you have to take a breath to be able to do this, because you see something that's gone wrong and you want to be like, oh, you idiot, why would you have this? But you don't come into conversations with that energy. You come in with, hey, we're both smart people who have the best of intentions and are trying to do right by each other, but it's not working. So where can we fix our systems rather than, and I've been completely guilty of this in my marriage, rather than coming in with, hey, comma, you idiot, comma, why have you undermined me? It must be because you don't respect me and you like the fact that you have a free maid for a wife, you know? And that's not the best way to start a conversation, although I've done it.
Yeah, right. You have to, the maximum generosity that you operate from, as you have said, is like, they maybe really don't get it. I think your kids really don't get, unless you walk them through it, that maybe you didn't really want to make dinner tonight, but you did because everybody had to eat and I'm really glad you liked it. That's probably news to them.
And it's kind of a good test of, I mean, I had very frank conversations of like, I don't want to be in a marriage like this. And my husband's response was, I want to be in a marriage with you, so I'm going to fix those things. That may not be everybody's experience. And then you may have to think about other realities and other choices. But I think if you, as always, we can only talk about marriage advice that is a marriage between people who basically have each other's best interests at heart. Because that you can't fix it if the other person is just going to be like, I don't care about your needs.
Right. Well, you also can't fix it if you let it, you know, get burdened by decades of resentment before you're like, I can't take it anymore. Right. Right. The goal is to maybe address it before then.
My whole philosophy on this podcast, I'm realizing, is whiteboards and notebook paper. Like, sit down and write it down and face it.
Can't argue with the whiteboard.
And you can't argue with a whiteboard, people, or a Google spreadsheet. Can't argue with it.
Wow, we should just talk about this every week. I have so much to say about this topic.
I feel like we may have to do a part two on this because we didn't even get to half the stuff I wanted to talk about. Part two coming up, friends. Do us a favor. We need you to participate in some visible workload by going and making sure that you are following or subscribing to the podcast. A lot of our listeners, and tell your friends, hey, are you still listening to What Fresh Hell? We disappeared from the feed for boring software reasons.
Apple Podcast reasons, yeah.
And, you know, check in with your friends. Are you still listening? You know, I know it fell off the feeds for a lot of people. Please help us get the word out because we want more people to be listening so we can keep making the show.
I just went in last week. I was in my Apple Podcast feed. What Fresh Hell is there. I'm following it. And it was not downloading new episodes anymore. This huge software change has turned that off. So even I, who certainly thought I was downloading episodes of my own show, my phone had stopped doing it thanks to this update.
I went to look at something the other day. I'm like, oh, I am not subscribed to my own podcast. That is a problem.
So do as we say, and now what we have also done.
Put it on your Google to-do list, friends.
Yes.
And with that, thanks so much for listening, and we will talk to you next time.
Thank you.
When it comes to raising kids, there's so much to consider. Things like, what do we feed them? When do we feed them? How do they sleep? What does it look like to raise kind kids? How does their nervous system work? How do I keep myself calm? What are my triggers? There's so much that comes into play, and we are distilling all of that information for you at Voices of Your Village podcast, where we bring experts in the field of early childhood and education and psychology and across the board so that you don't have to comb the internet for information. You get to show up and hang out and have shame-free, judgment-free conversations and insights into what it looks like to raise kind, empathetic, emotionally intelligent humans. I'm Alyssa Blask Campbell. I have a master's degree in early childhood education. I'm a mom of two, and I am walking this journey right alongside you doing this work. Come hang out with me at Voices of Your Village, and we can dive into real conversations with actionable tips.
Well, hey there, busy mama. Are you looking for ways to make your life easier, your home less chaotic, and at the same time, add more joy to your life? My name is Deanna Yates, and I'm the host of Wanna Be Clutter-Free, a podcast all about letting go of the stuff we don't need in our lives so that we can focus on what truly matters. Don't worry, I'm not going to tell you to throw it all away or make you feel guilty about keeping something you love, no matter how many other people don't quite understand it. But I will give you practical and, more importantly, actionable advice so that you can make progress right away. And you won't just hear it from me. There are amazing guests too. It's like having your bestie in your pocket telling you it's okay to let go of the things that are not serving you and your family in a totally non-judgmental way. So join me over on the podcast where we can work on progress over perfection for those of us that want to be clutter-free.